Hello and welcome back to the My First Marathon podcast, where we interview runners in all stages of their running careers about their first marathon experiences to prove to you that anyone can run a marathon. My name is Taylor, and today's runner found running back in middle school after getting cut from the basketball team and joining the cross country team. Ryan stuck with the sport through high school, but like it does for a lot of people, running eventually faded into the background as life got busy with work, moving around, and raising a family. Still, it kept finding its way back to him in different seasons, sometimes as an outlet and sometimes as something that he just felt pulled to return to. Eventually, that pull turned into a bigger goal for Ryan, and it's something that he had been carrying around for a while. He wanted to run a marathon before turning 40. In this episode, Ryan shares how he trained for his first marathon while balancing family life, why this race became about more than just himself, and what it felt like to fight through a really tough final stretch at the Houston Marathon to earn that finish. Without further ado, let's jump into the episode. Please welcome Ryan. Ryan, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Excited to talk to you and break down your first marathon story, which sounds like it happened fairly recently.
Very recently, yes.
Yeah, very cool. Well, first of all, just thank you for coming on the show. Excited to chat.
Thanks for having me.
Cool. Well, we start with where movement started. So yeah, talk to us about where this idea of movement or where this whole journey kind of started for you.
Yeah, so Texas kid. So baseball, basketball, got into middle school. And that's where you try for the school teams. And like every middle school boy, I thought I was God's gift to basketball. So tried it for the seventh grade team and got cut almost immediately. Just nothing to that. But had a buddy who also got cut who had to get on a school sports team for a class or something. He's like, hey, I'm going to do cross country. Will you go do cross country with me? I was like, yeah, let's do it. I've never run before, but like that before.
Yeah.
So we got into it. And after the first kind of week of just it sucking, we both fell in love with it. And I did cross country through my senior year of high school. I did long distance track. So through my sophomore year of high school and loved it, man. Loved the team aspect of kind of that sport, but also the individual aspect of it. I was never really like super great at it. I was always like seventh man on varsity, which means I ended up running JV a lot, but just loved doing that. Loved the racing, loved watching, you know, the progress that happens over time as you kind of get better and better and better. So that was kind of where it started. Wasn't good enough to really run in college. So got to college and didn't do a lot of running. I had to take a PE class. And so I took advanced aerobic fitness, which was the running class at our school, which was just like, hey, you show up 3 days a week and you run with the class. And then the final was 5 miles and your time determined your grade kind of a thing. Wow. So it was, it was kind of a weird thing, but I had a good time with that. And that was my freshman year. And then really didn't run a lot after that. Got married right after college. Moved around a little bit in the Dallas area in Texas, started having babies, just life got in the way of just movement and exercise in general. And it was in 2016, I lost my job. Mm-hmm. I guess the end of 2015, I lost my job. And, you know, I needed something to kind of figure that out and process a lot of that. So I got back into running and kind of fell in love with the solitude of it and just podcast in my ears, just processing what I'm walking through. Did that for probably a good 8 or 9 months of just kind of building mileage. I actually ran my first half marathon distance by accident. I went out for a run on a Sunday and was going and going. So I turn around and go back to the house and I'm going, look down at the watch, like, oh, 12 miles. I could squeeze in one more. What's one more? We could do this. And so did that and that was great. And then that, unfortunately, that kind of put a stop to that running season. Like I did that and it's like, I'm good. I don't need this anymore. And then 2020 came around and, we had a couple more babies in there. So did a little bit, but not a ton of stuff happening. Just family life was really the priority. 2020 happened. Everybody's at home. Everybody is stuck. And I heard somebody say, man, if you don't use this moment to kind of better yourself, you're wasting whatever this opportunity is. And so I started running again. At the beginning, you know, we all thought we were going to get out of it pretty quick. And so I actually signed up for a half marathon. So that would have been March 2020. I signed up for a half marathon for October thinking, hey, and then come about August, they're like, hey, man, we're not doing this. My family was really supportive. I'm like, hey, well, like your birthday is in October. Run the half marathon on your birthday as like, and like So we did. I didn't finish. I cramped up real bad. It sucked. My family had a medal for me. It was this fun little thing, but it was kind of a disappointing thing. But I'm going to keep doing this. That was kind of the time I really got into, like, you know, Instagram figures out, like, oh, you like running. And so here's all this stuff, running content and whatever. And it's like, oh, the Austin Marathon. Like, okay, we were in Austin at the time. And it's like, oh, that would be cool. Maybe I'll start up in the mileage and maybe we'll see. Maybe they'll do it during the COVID time or not. And started doing that. And then, you know, you fall down the rabbit hole of training and people. And that was where I first kind of figured out, like, zone two, like, that heart rate mattered, kind of. Like, that was not a thing I had kind of known before. And was really like, oh, like, that makes a lot of sense for me. I was dealing with some nagging injuries and just not as consistent as I wanted to be. And so it's like, well, what if I just kind of shifted to training like this and just see what happens? And it sucked. It was awful. It was so bad. You know, you go from running, you know, 9 minutes for 13 miles or whatever to, like, I mean, it was like 13, 14 minute pace sometimes, yeah, as you're trying to lower that. Yeah. So did that for a season. And then we moved to Houston, and kind of that, in that move, again, just kind of running fell off as we're trying to transition and stuff. And then got back into it. And, you know, the time off actually tweaked my mind to help me understand the zone two thing better. And so all of a sudden it was clicking and it was working. Yeah. Saw the time start to get faster and everything feel a little bit easier, and did that for 23 and 24. And I always kind of had this long-term goal of, I want to do a marathon before I'm 40. And like, time was kind of running out. And so I think it was actually a conversation with our friend Colin. He was like, hey man, I'm doing this, yeah, marathon kind of thing. I was like, oh dude, that sounds awesome. I want to do that one day. And then was following the Houston Marathon, where we live now. And I was like, oh man, like, I really want to do this. I really want to do this. And was on the website, like, the day of the Houston Marathon 25. Yeah. And they announced that, hey, here's the dates for next year. And they're like, hey, for whatever reason, it was like, hey, if you want to sign up now, this is the cheapest it's going to get.
Yeah, it's like the early,
I was like,
pricing or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I was like, well, if I put it on the calendar, I'm going to have to do it. Yeah. And so, you know, all my information, submit, hit the credit card, all that kind of stuff. It's okay, like, let's do this. I've got, like, you know, I knew enough at that point to know a training block was like 16 to 20 weeks. I got some time to kind of build up. And so spent, you know, through the summer just kind of throwing it down a little bit, did a couple 5K races and some stuff like that. And then, you know, middle of September of 25 was kind of when I had pegged the marathon block to start. And we took off and we ran with it. So
love it. That's great. Yeah. So it sounds like that the running, like, throughout all these seasons of your life is something that you keep coming back to. I guess, like, what if you could boil it down to a couple of things that you feel like keeps you coming back? What do you think those things are?
I think one of them is I am just inherently uncoordinated. So, like, sure, the idea of, like, getting into, like, pickleball, or like, I can't do it. Like, I'm just not that person. Yeah. I think too, I like the grittiness of it. Man, it is literally just you and your shoes and the road, and, you know, telling your body that it doesn't, or really telling your mind, it doesn't get to decide when I stop. I get to decide when I stop. And it's going back to, you know, when I was in cross country and the racing side of it, I liked that energy. I liked kind of, I'm a competitive person when it comes to running. And so I know that you put me in that race environment and I'm not going to let you out kick me. I'm not going to let, like, yeah, I will die before I let you cross that finish line before me. And so pridefully too, it's also like, I like the looks I get from people when it's, oh yeah, when they ask you, hey, what'd you do this morning? It's, oh yeah, I ran 18 miles. Like, I like that. Like, I like that little bit of pride, that the validation for people who don't do it is very, very good for me. So I think that's why I keep coming back. I think too, my wife has, like, some chronic illness issues, which means she can't do movement, like, just movement physically just can't do it. And so especially, like, coming back to this marathon, like, it was very much for me and like proving it to my, like I don't have a lot of hobbies. This is kind of my only thing for me, but it was also like, I want to move for my wife because my wife can't move. And stuff. And so just like, man, like, hey, I'm going to carry you. If I have to drag my body across this finish line, this race, I'm going to drag you along with me in spirit because this is the hand you've been dealt and I've not been dealt that hand. So let me capitalize on the hand I've been dealt. Okay. So I think that's why I keep coming back to it.
I love it. Yeah. And I think that obviously running for ourselves and a lot of times our first marathon is like deeply personal because it's the first like big thing that we're doing for ourselves. Right. But I do love the stories where you're carrying something else with you. Like you said, like you have a greater purpose. We talk a lot about our why on this show. Like what's your why? What's your reason for running? And I think each race can kind of like have its own unique why, but it sounds like for you, like it's been this, it was this greater purpose that you had carrying with you, which I think pulls you through so many like tougher moments.
Yeah. Well, even like I have four kids too.
Yeah.
And so like wanting them to see dad, like do a hard thing that he sets his mind to. We always, you know, I don't think you have kids. Little kids are always like, it's too hard. I can't do it. And then you tell them you're running a marathon. Like, how long's a marathon? 26 miles. Well, how far away is that? That would be like running from our house in the outskirts to beyond downtown Houston. They're like, daddy, that is so far.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, it is, but your daddy's going to do it. Like, I want to be that kind of an inspiration for my kids. So it was very personal, but also very much like for my family to see some things and feel some things, I guess. I don't know. So
yeah, no, I love it. I love it. That's great. Well, cool. So then the zone two stuff I think is really interesting, especially because obviously you had this running background through cross country and everything, but I'm sure that type of training was wildly different than the type of training you had in cross country and probably like
absolutely
up to that. So yeah, what were some of the things that you were learning, noticing about zone two training?
Man, it was like, man, kill your pride at the door.
Yeah.
Like kill your pride at the door. And I heard somebody on another podcast somewhere say, like, man, like nobody driving by you when you're out there running has any clue how fast you're going. But like you feel like they do. Like you're plotting down a 13-minute mile and you're all these cars driving by like that dude doesn't need to be out there.
Yeah, you want to hold a sign that's like I'm exactly training.
Keeping the heart rate low today, fellas. Like that's what we're doing. So it was a lot of that, but then again, kind of that first stint with it, like it was just hard to get out of the mentality of I know I can go faster. And then I took a long time off and came back to it. I was kind of starting from zero again. And that was actually kind of what flipped the switch in my brain of like, hey, you don't know if you could go faster. You haven't run in a year. Like, so whatever the slow is the slow. And let's get the heart really dialed in here. And then when you actually start seeing it working and you start seeing it same heart rate or same low heart rate zone, faster paces, you're able to go longer. And it, just the science behind it too makes sense. Your body doesn't know pace. Your body knows effort and your body knows time on your feet. And that just so tracked with me. And I also just didn't want to, I kind of committed the last time I got started. I was like, I want this to be the thing. Like, I want to be the old man running the marathon who everybody's like, how is that dude doing it? And I know for myself, longevity wise, like, I need to do it this way as opposed to a different way of doing it. And the heart rate thing too, if you give me a pace to work at, I will use that as like, I'm very like OCD about those things. And it felt better to have the OCD about like, don't go above this heart rate as opposed to hit this pace. Cause some days I'm just not going to feel like hitting that pace. And then some days I am. But the heart rate's not going to lie to me. It's like, hey, you didn't sleep good. It's just going to be what it is today. So.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, no, I think that's like a unique experience. Not a lot of people get into like zone training for their first marathon. A lot of times, like you mentioned, it's just like go and just go like time on your feet and that's it. But it's cool that you were able to like deep dive into that and really like reap the benefits and see the progression of zone two training. What were you looking into in terms of like a training plan, like a paper plan, an app? Like what? Yeah. What were you
Doing all this heart rate stuff and like, there's just not a lot out there that's based that way, right? Sure. Like you look at an app or whatever, it's gonna be like, hey, here's the paces you need to hit, whatever. And I stumbled upon somebody on Instagram, who like her whole Instagram thing, Caroline Olson is I think her name.
Oh yeah. I know who you're talking about.
And she was like, hey, I do like, this is how I structure training for my athletes. And I was like, does that mean, does that mean what I think it means? And so I went and looked and said, oh, it does. And so I bought her beginner marathon training plan that was all time on feet and heart rate zones, like heart rate targets. You know, so it was 16 weeks long. So, you know, you backtrack it from the date. So your taper is good and all that kind of stuff. And then learned pretty quickly that it wasn't enough mileage. Like it was maybe 3 or 4 runs a week. And a lot of them, it just wasn't a lot. And so I ended up, for better or worse, from basically September 1st until right around Christmas, like December 25th, I ran every single day, no days off. Mm-hmm. I don't recommend doing that. I was kind of calculating out the mileage I thought I was going to get. It's like, I don't see how you finish a marathon running 4 times a week where maybe it's less than 20 miles because you're doing it heart rate.
And
so
it was like mostly, there
was a build, but, but again, like I was just, it just didn't feel like enough mileage for me to where I thought like I could get across comfortably or feel confident going into it. And so I stuck with like, it structured my long runs for me and it structured my quality sessions for me. And then the easy runs, it kind of told me the, how much time to be on feet. And I would do that almost every other day of the week kind of a thing. And stuff. But what was interesting about the marathon too, like even the long run was heart rate based and time based. So it didn't tell me go run 16 miles. It said, hey, you're going to go run for 2.5 hours today and keep it under your under this percentage of your max heart rate.
Yeah.
I was telling some people that and they're like, that's a wild way to do that.
It's very interesting. Yeah.
It was super interesting, but you start pushing back against the training plan a little bit. Like the quality sessions were great. That the speed work is the other thing I've never really, I hadn't done since high school. And so it kind of gave me a good structure for that. But then those long runs, like it was going to cap out at 3 hours.
That's a big difference. Yeah.
And so I start doing the math and I'm like, that would be like maybe 17 miles at this under 75% of my max heart rate kind of thing. And so I started, just like with the number of mileage I was doing the week, I started upping those. I think I capped out at 3 hours and 45 minutes, which basically ended up being a 20-mile long run. So I found some stuff in that training plan that was really good for a first time. It gave me a ton of confidence I could do it.
Yeah.
There was some idiosyncrasies in that plan that like I probably wouldn't run with like for my next one. Like I'm probably not going to use that plan structure for how I go, but it was very, very interesting to do it that way. It kind of took the pressure off of, because I not, you know, we're jumping ahead maybe, but like I didn't really have a time goal.
Yeah.
It was like, I want to finish. And this kind of get this like, hey, we're not worried about time here at all. We're just trying to do this thing and trying to finish. And so that was kind of where we, you know, what it was. So.
Yeah. Well, I actually think like you said, that there's obviously pros and cons to literally every single plan you could possibly follow to be fair. But yeah, I think that maybe that was a pretty effective, like beginner, just for the mindset, right? Like not missing paces, failing long runs, quote unquote, failing long runs, right? I'm sure that took a lot of the pressure off of just like this kind of like all or nothing mindset that we tend to develop when we're training for our first marathon. It's like, no, you just go out there and you get time on your feet. And like you said, if you don't have a time goal, like, you know, you're just doing it. So I actually could see a lot of benefit in training like that.
I almost wish she had had like she had beginner, intermediate, and advanced. And I clearly was not like, I needed something in between that had just a little bit more mileage on the structured plan. But we made it work. I think I capped out the peak week of it. I think I hit right at 50 miles that week.
That's a pretty good build. That
felt pretty good. I think my body can tolerate a lot of higher volume at a slower pace. And I think that does well for me.
Yeah.
So we'll look into that moving forward.
Yeah. I was going to say, we'll for sure kind of talk about, after we talk about your marathon story and everything, like what's changed for you, what you would change about the plan. So we'll certainly get there. Well, cool. Well, what do you remember about like the high points and low points of training? I know that's a pretty broad question, but I like to ask about that because there's usually those runs that like knock the confidence a little bit. And then there's usually those runs that you're like, I can run a marathon. So I'm just, curious where those points kind of came up for you in training.
Yeah. I think so, you know, there were still quality sessions in there to up your speed kind of thing. I think almost every one of those I walked away with like, that was awful. That was terrible. I don't know if you'd call it a high point or a low point, because I could spin it either way. So when you get into those long runs, I do my long runs on Fridays. Like, that's just kind of how I structure them. Like, I do it Friday is one of my days off. And so I do long runs on Fridays, and you see like 3 hours or 3+ hours. And I also try to do it where I am back before my family is awake. Mm. And so you're setting an alarm for 2:45 a.m.
Wow,
like that 20-mile, the longest one I did, I think I started at like 2:55 a.m.
Dang.
And my watch will auto upload to Strava.
Sure.
And then you go in, and it tagged it as night run. And I was like, I don't like that. I don't like that at all. So just a ton of miles in the dark, a ton of miles alone. But I think, like, at the end of the day, like, that was a helpful thing, because I knew I was doing this by myself. Like I didn't have a buddy running with me. I knew I was going to have to kind of be self-sufficient in that. So I think that was probably a good part of it. The first time I did 17 miles, the long run ended up being 17 miles, was a huge confidence booster, because that before that, I capped out at 16 miles. Mm. That was the longest I'd ever run previously. And I did the 17 faster than I did the 16, like 4 years previously, and still doing the zone 2. And I was like, okay, I got this. And then I did like 19 the next week. I said, okay, I got this. And then the 20, I said, okay, we can, it's going to suck. Like, this is going to hurt. Yeah. But we can get there. That was, those were the quality sessions were probably the low point of all of it. But a lot of it was just super proud of the volume I was doing, and the time and effort I was putting in while still being a dad and being a husband and full-time job. And, you know, those kinds of things, was really trying to kind of nail the balance of all of it. And, and I I'm an introverted person by nature. Like, I get energized by being alone. And so no better way than in the dark for 4 hours by yourself on a Friday morning,
you know? Lots of time to think.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of podcasts, a lot of audiobooks and stuff. So,
I'm also a morning runner. I love a good, like, pitch black outside. Nobody's in the neighborhood. It's so quiet. It's like, there's nothing like it. It is such good thinking time. Such, like you said, podcast time. It's so nice.
Yeah, I don't understand. Every now and then I'll miss a morning run, but I'm like, I really need to run today. And so I'll do it at lunch, or I'll do it in the evening or the afternoon. I don't know how these psychopaths do it, man. I don't, like, because I've had the whole day. I probably haven't eaten right. Like, this is going to be awful. And it normally is. So, okay, well, I will get up tomorrow morning to do it. So.
Oh my gosh, I totally agree with you. Side tangent, but I posted a little poll in my community the other day, and just like, or somebody else posted a poll actually asking who's a morning runner or evening runner. The people saying evening, I was like, I don't get it. I don't understand. But yeah, to each their own. Everybody's got their own rhythms that works for them. But man, yeah, I totally agree with you. Well, cool. And I love what you mentioned. Like, I do think that especially when like parents come on the show and talk about the like example that they're setting for their kids, and like you said, like the life balance going back and forth between you know, making sure that you're showing up for your kids, but then also doing this thing that's proving to your kids that you're doing something hard and, you know, being a good example. What like, maybe a little premature, but like, what advice do you have for other like parents who are training for a marathon? You know what I mean? Like, through the tougher weeks where you are having to make sacrifices and, you know, playing around things.
My kids are all kind of older, like 8 to 13 are their ages, 7 to 13 are their ages. And so there was a lot of just conversation like, hey, daddy's got this thing tomorrow, long run, whatever. Daddy's probably going to be pretty miserable after that. Daddy's probably gonna be pretty worthless, but daddy's going to be around and come, you know, hang out, whatever. I think the thing for me was I wanted it to be as disruptive, the least amount of disruptive to my family as it could be, right? Because like it is super disruptive. It is super disruptive to your life and your energy levels and your nutrition. Like, all of that is just like every part of it is disruptive. And I just kind of made the commitment. I was like, I am going to make this as the least amount of disruptive. And so, like, yeah, I'll get up super early if it means I'm back before y'all are awake. Yeah. And yeah, I may have to sit on the couch and I maybe can't move as well today, but like, I can help with the school. I can help take you where you need to be. So I think it's a prioritization. But I also think it's an inviting your kids, if they're old enough to get it, like my oldest was super fascinated. She's like, okay, it's like, why are you doing it this way? What does that mean? Like, what do you think you're going to do it in? And so I just getting to have conversation about the thing that is meaning a lot to you. Cause kids get talking a lot about what means a lot to them. I don't think they get a lot of their parents volunteering information about something they're really passionate about.
Yeah, totally.
And so like you know, I'll watch my younger ones kind of eyes glaze over and they'll slowly start to kind of fade out of the background. Like, I'm going to go play. I don't really care about this thing, Dad. Yeah. But the older ones were like, no, like, I'm super interested. And so, cool. I just think, as much as you can keep it not disruptive, if you can work that out, I think that that was at least the secret sauce for us and for my family during this season. So
love that. Yeah, I think that's great. Well, cool. And then the last question before we start to break down the marathon, fuel. What were you looking into for like fueling? Was this a newer concept to you? I know you had the cross country background, but I know not every cross country program kind of teaches you about that stuff. So,
Especially back in the early 2000s, they did not teach you anything about anything, right?
Yeah, right.
And I went years being a fasted runner. Like that was just what I did. Again, kind of when I started getting that half marathon during the COVID time, I don't know. I'm sure you've heard of him. I don't know how you feel about it. So I was in Austin though. So Nick Bear was kind of all over the place.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
And got the first bit of G1M Sport. Like he used to come in a bag. Like that was how they used to sell it. And so got that for it. And like, hey man, this is really light on my stomach. Cause I have a very bad stomach. Running really, really wrecks me. And so that was really nice on my stomach, but I was also using, just the goo branded gels. Salted watermelon, good flavor, again, terrible for the stomach, just awful, awful, awful. So kept following kind of what his company was doing when I wasn't running. And then they released their own gels, kind of with that saying, we want to be really, you know, with the GI stuff. And so really used like they're kind of their marathon stack. So you had the G1M Sport, you have the Go gels, and you have the electrolytes for afterwards. On those longer ones, I was running with a bottle that had more G1M Sport in it. And then every 35, 40 minutes, I'm popping a gel. In terms of like the training, that was all really good. Like again, really good on my stomach. I think, we'll talk about the marathon here in a minute. I think I'm going to need something with more carbs. I don't think it's quite giving me, I don't think it quite gave me enough for what I was enduring for that. And especially, you know, if I'm going to move faster, I think I'm going to need more. So that'll be a part of kind of the next season is kind of figuring some of that stuff out because I do have the GI stuff. But knew about it going in and kind of was very much playing around with that on the long runs and learning, hey, fueled performance is better than fasted performance. And so like even today, I'm going to have a little G1M Sport before I take off on this 35 minute, you know, recovery run just because I'm not going to go do it on an empty stomach. So, but that was what I used in training and that's what I used for the marathon.
Love it. Okay, cool. Let's talk about the marathon. So obviously you went into taper after you ran your 20 mile, your peak run. So yeah, talk to us about how taper was and then what the like couple days leading up to the race felt like.
I was so stoked about the taper because I was so destroyed. I was so destroyed. And so the taper started kind of right around the week of Christmas. And I was like, okay, this would be good. That's perfect. We're going to do a little traveling, all that stuff. I get flu A Christmas Day.
Oh no.
It was going through my family. Like, I mean, there's six of us. So like, it's gonna, so I'm like, I'm sleeping on the couch. Hands are burning from all the hand sanitizer. Wake up. I'm not feeling great Christmas morning. I'm like, I'm gonna walk today. So I'm gonna walk. Came home. I do not feel good. And I normally run a very low temperature. Like I'm under 98 normally, just kind of normal. I was like 102.
Oh
it's like, gosh, this is not good. And so it was, oh goodness gracious, probably 6 days off running during the taper and just dying inside. Like I've heard on some of your shows and other people I've talked to, like you feel it's itchy. You feel like you're not, and I was doing nothing.
Oh, that's brutal.
And so we end up, we had to postpone a trip to go see my family. So we end up going and doing that. I tell my wife, like, I have to run. I don't have a fever. I still have this awful cough, but I have to go get some stuff in. You're just going to have to trust me that this is what needs to happen. She's like, I get it. started picking it back up. I don't know how many more days out, but did probably 4 or 5 more runs, you know, just slow, very slow. And like worried about my fitness, like the fitness, what, like I was showing up and keeping the heart rate low, but the cough was really concerning me. It was really concerning me. And it felt like I had kind of wasted the taper. So Friday morning of marathon weekend, got up and did a run. The cough was getting a little bit better. So did felt good about kind of that last run I was going to do. I wasn't going to run on Saturday. My wife and I drove. So we live like far east side of Houston. So I had to drive to downtown to the expo, get my bib, walked around the expo, all that kind of stuff. We actually had to drive around too. They were going to set up somewhere middle of the course to meet me so that they could be there at the finish line. So we kind of had to drive around to figure out where that was. It was really kind of hitting the expo that I was like, I don't know if I can do this. It was nerves. And then just like the, what did the flu take from me? Like, I don't feel as confident as I did on very, very tired legs. You know, days ago, whatever it was. So, you know, confide that in my wife, confide that in our friend Colin, and everybody's kind of, hey, like, it's just going to be what it is. It's just going to be like, you're going into it. Like I didn't have a time goal. Like in my brain, it's like, if I can do it sub-5, it'll be okay. Kind of a thing. But just so Saturday, you know, friends had a baby shower. So I go to that. I dip out early. I'm rice and electrolytes and water, trying to stay off my feet. You know, got my, you know, have what I'm going to wear, all my gels, double checking all that, prepping all the drink, then, you know, do your best to go to bed early and then not sleep super awesome. What's my experience? And then the alarm went off at, oh Lord, 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. I think I had a friend coming to get me because he's run the Houston Marathon before. He didn't know I was doing it, so he didn't sign up. And then he was like, oh man, I would have done it with you. So, hey, let me take you so that your family doesn't have to. Well, my parents were supposed to come in for the marathon too. And so my dad was going to take me and go back, get the family, then meet me out on the course somewhere. Well, they called on the Friday as we're about to head up to the expo, like, hey, we're sick, we can't come. Oh no. So we worked all that kind of stuff out. So we get to the expo or to the convention center, like the runners area, goodness, 4:30 a.m., like super early. Yeah. And just kind of stood around. I mean, it's indoors, thankfully. It was cold that morning. It was like low 40s, which is pretty cold for here. Yeah. But just inside, ton of porta potties, just kind of hanging out with him, talking.
You were inside.
That was super nice. That was super nice. And stuff. And then the A Corral was supposed to get started like 6:45. So about 6:20, the bathroom lines are getting excessively long. I'm like, I got to hit it one more time. So waiting a long bathroom line inside, do that. And then my friend was going to walk me to kind of where I was going to be and that he was going to head out. So walking, kind of found a pace group I kind of want to hang with for at least a little bit. But then you start hearing everybody talking and it's like, hey, no, this like, I was in D Corral. It was like, hey, D, like they're already moving up toward the start line. And it was like 7 a.m. Okay. So I keep walking and kind of keep following the crowd until finally it's like, you're not at the start line, but you're right behind the group that's at the start line and you're going to wait there for 20 minutes or whatever. So that's when the nerves start kicking in. There's people everywhere crowding in. You can hear people starting, you hear all that stuff. And I'm just like, I gotta go to the bathroom again. And it's just, you're fenced in there's nothing. Okay. Well, I guess I'm going to find a bathroom as quickly as I can on the course. And then we start, I guess, C Corral move forward. They're moving us up. D Corral starts. So I'm kind of at the back of it. And then there's last chance bathrooms right there. I'm going to hit that. And then I'm going to take off and then we get started. Perfect. So.
Yeah. And then the nerve, I don't know about you, but then I feel like you finally are like, okay, I can do something about these nerves. Like, it's nice once you finally kick off.
Well, it was good to get moving. It was good to like, I don't know. I probably wouldn't get there as early again. Cause you're sitting around forever.
You just don't know
what you don't know kind of a thing. But so yeah, we, you know, you're moving up, and then you cross that finish line, you hit go on the watch, and you're off to the race, whatever that's going to look like for you.
Love it. Yeah. Well, cool. Well, yeah, let's break down the race. So usually we'll do like the first half, but feel free to break it up into the chunks where you kind of had specific moments. But yeah, take it away. Let's talk about your marathon.
So you get started, and it's like, again, like, okay, we're going to go by feel. We're just going to have a good time, enjoy this experience, and just is going to be what it is. And started running and felt great, felt super good, hit that first mile marker. Okay, we're moving, and just kept noticing every mile ticking by faster and faster and faster. So, oh, this probably isn't good, but this is what I'm doing. At some point, so the Houston Marathon has a big half marathon component to it as well. And so at mile 7, it breaks off. So you're like in a crowd for a really long time. The vibe in Houston is so good. There's bands and just people, like the city, like in Houston's, you know, fourth biggest metropolitan area in America. Like, huge. They come out for this thing. It's awesome. Super good vibe. And so just good. We're cruising. We're having a good time. Hitting some aid stations, getting some water, you know, popping gels when it's time. Break off from the half marathon at about 7.5 miles. It gets quiet. It gets so quiet. The pack really, really thins out. And it started to kind of get to me. I'm like, oh man, the hype is kind of gone. This is gonna, like, okay, here's where we start. And I'm running down this tree-lined road and look, and all of a sudden I hear people calling my name. And there is a group of family friends who are there who did not tell me they were coming. And they're freaking out, and I'm freaking out because they're like, I had no idea they were coming.
That's
kind
so
of a thing.
Sweet. I love that.
And so that, you know, I get past them. My eyes are starting to get kind of watery. But I'm like, okay, like, I needed that, and still going, still cruising. They meet up with me again right before the half marathon point, but just cruising. Now I made the mistake of downloading the Houston Marathon app. Beforehand, and to show my wife how to do it, I said, like, track a runner, track me, which meant it was dinging my watch with updates like other people were getting about me.
Like your pace and things like that.
Exactly. Which like I'm doing it, but it's like predicting your time.
And so
I'm not paying attention. Like, I just know I'm doing miles like that. That's all I'm really focusing on. I know I'm going probably too fast. Cross the half marathon point, and it dings me. And it's like, hey, man, you just did that in like 2:08. And I was like, that's a little fast, but okay, let's. A text from our friend Colin. He's like, dude, you are flying, which obviously I'm not going to respond. But I was like, thanks, Colin. Holding on. There's this big hill where you're basically running up an on-ramp onto one of the highways they've closed out here. It's like, I didn't train hills at all. Walk that bad boy, come back down. We're cruising. I'm getting to the point where I know my family's supposed to be. And I run up on my family, and it's not just my family. They've gone and gotten other friends to be there to support, and they freak out, and it's awesome. Again, kind of right where I needed it. Turn a corner, and I hit mile 17. And that's the first time I'm like, uh-oh, I might be in trouble here. Yeah. Went out too fast, and I don't think I can hold this. The question is how much am I going to have to slow down?
Sure.
The Houston Marathon's a big loop. So you kind of hit right around 20, and it loops back, and it's basically just one long, not straightaway, but like it's a 10K back to the finish line.
Yep.
And I hit that turn. And basically, the moment I got beyond the furthest I had ever run, I was like, I'm going to have to start slowing down. And then I'm starting to have like a lot of problems breathing. Like, I can't get a deep enough breath. So I'm like walking for a little bit, taking off, walking for a little bit, taking off. Can't catch my breath. Start the gels. I start not being able to keep them down. The only thing I'm able to keep down is the water that at the aid stations.
Yeah.
I get to about 22. And I'm like, I don't know if I can do this. Like, I really don't know if I can do this. Like, you know, I have my phone, and like I'm running a little fanny pack thing. I got my phone in there. I got my headphones on. Like, I seriously considered calling my wife and being like, I don't think I can do this.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, okay, I'm going to run for as long as I can run. And like, at least how my body was responding, I couldn't slow down. it was either I'm running or I have to walk, like yeah. to slow down is hurting. And there's also these rolling hills on that last 10K because you're going under under highways. Like, it's just a whole thing that I had not really prepared for. So just, man, just in the pain cave, in the suck, like it's awful. It's awful. But then you start seeing downtown, which is where you're finished. Like, okay, I'm getting closer. I'm getting closer. Around mile 24, I hit an aid station to get some biofreeze. Just one of my knees is really hurting. It was right where I needed it at exactly the right moment. And then right around 24, there's this, the aid stations are kind of like on either sides of the course, kind of depending on where they were. And so, but you start getting back to where there's civilization who's there to cheer you on. And so I'm seeing half marathoners who have finished, who are coming out with their medals on. I'm like, oh, you guys, like that's kind of cruel. So they're cheering you on. You got the aid stations who are like, they're reading the name on your bib to give you that little bit of encouragement. And then there's this lady standing in the middle of the road. I think she was a course aide. She was doing something. And I have to stop to walk as I'm kind of approaching her. I'm going to just kind of walk around her, like whatever.
Yeah.
And she gets in my face and is like cussing at me. Like, you didn't come this far to effing quit at mile 24.
Wow.
And I'm like, I don't know if this is encouraging or if I should be offended right now.
Yeah, am I being bullied?
I kind of feel like I'm being bullied by this lady I don't know. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to start running again so I can leave her behind. And right, so I start running. The minute I kind of hit this little corner, she can't see me. I'm going to walk again because I'm dying.
Yeah, I'm
I hit mile 25 and I'm like, I want to run the last mile of this. I want to finish as strong as I can. And so going with that, after about a quarter mile, I had to stop again. I can't do it. I'm dying.
It always sounds good in theory. But you
it sounded
I'm
really
gonna,
good
I'm
in theory.
Run, and then you start and you're like, oh, okay.
And then you kind of rise this little hill and make this corner. And then you are back down in downtown where there are now people lining the streets everywhere. And you like, you know, you're almost there. And so, okay, like, let's go. Like, just embrace it. Let's go. So I start running and you see a sign and it said, what did it say? It's at 800 meters left. And I was like, okay, we got this. And they had this thing, like almost like, I can't judge this, but down the road that I could see, a little like over the road kind of thing that said, make your mark. Mm. And I was like, okay, I don't think that's the finish line, but I think that means I'm getting very, very close. And so I'm picking it up and I'm like, again, that cross country competitive, like I'm gonna start picking people off right now. I'm not really racing these people. I'm gonna start picking people off now.
Yeah.
So I'm picking people off and you see another sign that tells you how far you have to go. And I swear it said 400 meters. I'm like, it's one lap around the track. I got this.
Yeah.
Run and run. I'm like, this is the longest 400 meters that has ever existed in the history of man. And then I see another sign that actually said 400 meters.
Oh, no.
The previous one had said 600 meters. It's you're kidding me. So 400 meters. Okay. Like, we're going to go. I can see the finish line now. You hear people, like, I assume my family's somewhere in that. We're just going to go. We're going to go. We're going to go. And cross the finish line, stop the watch, look down at the time, and then, kind of raise my head. And it's like, so how the Houston Marathon works is the chute takes you back into that convention center where we were at in the morning. And it's the longest chute ever. Like, so they give you your medal, and then they keep kind of, they're moving you forward. Here's the picture. And they keep saying, you're almost there. And it was at that moment where like my anger came out. I was like, I need people to stop telling me I'm almost there because I'm not.
Stop
and I know I'm
signs.
Not. I know I'm not.
The signs. Yeah.
And so you're walking through this long chute. It's like, hey, here's a banana and here's your chocolate milk and whatever. I'm tearing up because I'm emotional. I'm tearing up because I'm hurt. I still can't, like, that whole can't catch a breath. Like, I could not deep inhale in any kind of a way. And that chute drops you at one end of this hall where it's like, hey, come over here and get your shirt kind of a thing. So I go over and I get the shirt. And then the family reunification area is the complete opposite end of this. I'm going to have to keep walking before I get anything. You walk past like HEB is a big local grocery store down here, and they like, hey, there's breakfast here if you want. I'm walking past all these people eating bacon and eggs, and I'm like, if I touch food right now, it's going to be bad news.
Yeah.
I'm just emotional, feeling awful, finally get to see my family, and I just collapse into my wife. Just, I'm crying on her shoulder. I cannot breathe. But all those friends and family are there. So I gotta like suck it up and hug my kids and thank these people for coming. But that was, you know, that was it. And I was a marathon finisher, and yeah, so.
No, that's great. I love it. And we brought up Colin quite a bit, and I actually think this is from his episode too. So I'm stealing his, a quote from him, but it's like that moment in a race, like it sounds like for you is at mile 22 where you've that mindset flips from like I can't to I can, that I think is always so interesting. It's like you made it 22 miles, and then you had like your brain and your body was telling you can't do this. It's always like I hear so many stories like this, and it's that moment of like that I think that like you become something different, like so you push to like a new bound that you didn't know that you had mentally and physically, of like that flipping point from I can't to I can. What were some of the, like, I don't know if you're a mantra person or like if you remember what you were saying to yourself. I know there's always a lot going on in those moments, but yeah, like what kept you moving forward? What do you feel like got you out of that, that like, I can't moment?
I think it was I refuse to quit and have to ride one of those vans back. I think that was part of it. It's like, I'm not doing that unless I absolutely have to. And it was, you know, talking to people, like I'm the only person in my kind of orbit, like here locally, who was doing this. Like I don't have any other friends. And so everybody's like, well, hey, so have you run that distance yet? Have you run 26? It's like, no, you don't do that. There's a bunch of physical reasons why you don't do it. I think training plans structure it too, so you experience that last 10K, where it's like, man, because like it's uncharted territory. If I know what I've got ahead of me, I can do anything.
Yeah.
I didn't know. And so that's kind of where it was. And it's like, well, I got to get to my wife, and I got to get to my kids, and I got to like, they're going to be proud of me, whatever, but I want to also be proud of me. I want to know that I left everything I had that I could not have done anymore. And so it was just kind of like one foot in front of the other. We'll stop at every aid station. I'm going to hit every bit of water. I'm going to go to the bathroom. I need to go to the bathroom. And no, I don't want your beer. No, I don't want your cup of pickles. Like eyes forward, turn the music up a little bit louder, and get to the end. You said you were going to do this, and you're going to do this. You said you were going to do this, and you're going to do this. So if you want a mantra, it was like, you said you're going to do this, you're going to do this. And so that was kind of what got me through.
I love that. Yeah, that's so cool. Well, cool. And then I know we asked for a piece of advice, like a little earlier for parents specifically, but a piece of advice, like what, thinking about the feeling that you got crossing the finish line, like if you could offer a piece of advice for somebody who has not experienced that, and maybe they're a little intimidated by the marathon, maybe they're decided to train, but they don't really know what they're up against, I guess. Like, what's the advice that you would give somebody like that?
Man, courage is doing it scared. Right. It's supposed to be intimidating. Like our bodies can do it, but the body is not, American bodies are inherently not built for this kind of thing, right? And so do the thing scared, like just put the 5K, whatever, put it down and do the thing scared, and you're going to learn a lot about yourself. Few things in my life have been as momentous as crossing that finish line and saying, like, you did a thing that, you hear all these statistics, but it's something like, less than 0.1% of the world, 0.01% of the world has completed a marathon.
Yeah.
Like, by just showing up and crossing the finish, if you have to walk the whole thing, you are doing something that less than 0.01% or something like that of the world has done. You are an elite athlete. But by any definition, you are an elite athlete. It doesn't matter if it took you 8 hours to do it. You are an elite athlete at that point. And so, man, do it scared. Because you're going to surprise yourself, and you are capable of a lot of people afterwards, you know, that ask how the marathon went. And a lot of the sentiment after that is, I could never do that. And what I've said to almost every single person who said to me is like, you could.
Yeah.
You absolutely could. And now it's not for everybody, and not everybody needs to do this, right? But like, if you wanted it, just like anything else you want in life, if you wanted it, you could absolutely do this. And if you can get the pride away of like, it's got to be a sub three the first time, it's got, like, if you can get out of some of that nastiness and just be like, I'm going to go do it. I'm going to have fun. I'm going to do it with a friend. I don't care about the pace. I want the vibe. I want that medal. I want whatever. Gets out of the pride. Just like, hey, I'm going to learn some stuff and I'm going to struggle. And I'm a firm believer that you grow the most when you struggle. All the growth in my life has come from hardship, not from prosperity. And so the amount of growth that I got from that 26 is invaluable to me. Like it is beyond compare. And I would just man, whether it's that or it's a 13 or it's a 10K, it's a 5K, it's the 1 mile fun run with your kid, man, you will get so much out of this. I mean, you asked why I keep coming back to it. I think that's part of it is the suffering produces endurance. The suffering produces the character that you're hoping you become. You start having those crazy thoughts afterwards, like, you know, I could, maybe an ultra could happen. Like, you know, like,
yeah,
maybe, you know, like, you know, like it, but it broadens your horizon of what you think is possible. Yeah, I could start that business. Yeah, I could do this thing. Like, embrace the discomfort and watch how you surprise yourself. And then, man, embrace that feeling proud of yourself for doing that. Like, man, I did this. I put in the work and I showed up and this is what happens. And whether you hit a time or not, I celebrate that, man. Like that would be my advice to people.
No, I love it. There were so many good nuggets in there. I love all of that. It's like this idea, like you said, like this idea of when you do something hard and not just do something hard on the day of your marathon, but you commit to doing, you know, 18 to 20 weeks of something really, really hard. Like it puts everything in perspective. All of a sudden the dentist appointment you were scared to book, you're like, I could do that. Like it makes everything feel so much smaller when you can just like prove to yourself that you're capable of something so much bigger than you think you are. So no, I love all of that. That's huge advice. Yeah. Thank you for that. Well, cool. Well, let's wrap us up with some fun questions here. You already kind of answered one of them in the episode, but we'll kind of reiterate it a little bit. But fuel and shoes, I always give the disclaimer that with fuel, it's your own journey. Try everything and anything when it comes to fuel.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Shoes, go to your local running store, get your feet measured, do what's best for you. But for you, you mentioned a couple fuel options. What have been your favorites?
Yeah. So, I mean, I am a big, the next go around, I don't train fast, but I'm also not eating anything. Like it's purely liquid carbs going in. So for that, I do like G1M Sport. I think it tastes pretty good. Yeah. It gets me where I need to be, and stuff. They've got some pretty good flavors. Again, I use the Go Gels during the marathon, the caffeinated and the non-caffeinated. I think the caffeine thing may be hype. I didn't really feel a lot of difference from that. I'm going to try some new stuff. I've had some recommendations from some of your interviews and stuff. Yeah. That I'm going to try in the next year. I think I just need some more carbs. I have recently, I use the BPN electrolytes too. I think they taste good. I like that zero sugar, all that good stuff. But I've recently gotten into Magna. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I work with them. Yeah, they're great.
Oh, okay, cool. So all of a sudden Facebook was like, hey, you want some good tasting apple juice? And I was like, do I? Of course I do. And so I got some of that, and like magnesium has been a thing I've been trying to kind of incorporate into my life in general. And that's like a lot of the their electrolytes have a lot of magnesium in it. So I'm playing with some of that right now. So we'll see how that kind of affects things. I'm like 3 days in. So it tastes good. That's all I've got right now.
It's so good. If you love iced tea, I don't know if you've had the iced tea one, but
I think they gave me some samples of the iced tea ones that I'm interested in trying. So as far as fuel goes, that's kind of like I'm going to test some stuff out for this next one. Shoes. I was all the way back to cross country. I was a Saucony guy. Like that was I ran in.
Yeah, cool.
So like old school. Started getting to the marathon block, and whatever I had, just I wore through it really quick. So I had to get something new, and I wanted to try something different, and so. Tried the New Balance Rebel V5.
Oh, sure.
Really liked it, but again, was just burning through it really quickly. And then, a bunch of people in my life knew I was doing this. And so one day, we have a local running store that just opened here. Like, it's less than 6 months old. And one day on my desk at work shows up a little card that says, hey, we're in your corner. You're going to crush this thing. Here's some money for some shoes. And they got me a credit at this running store, like $400 worth of shoe credit. kind of thing. And so they got me into ASICs. And so I got a pair of the Gel Cumulus 28 and then the Nova Blast 5. And I ran the marathon in the Nova Blast 5. Nice. So we'll probably continue using the Nova Blast. That's probably going to become the daily. I've got a pair. I caught a pair of Super Blast 2s before the 3s came out. Those come very highly recommended. So that'll kind of be the long run shoe through until sometime in the training block, and I'll probably have to get something new, and we'll see kind of where I go from there. But I'm big fan of what I've seen from ASICS so far. I do like Saucony still, just tried something different. And I wanted to use more of those New Balances. I burned through them too fast because of the mileage. Gotcha. So
very cool. I've been leaning a little ASICS heavy lately. I've got these Adidases that I'm like hooked on right now, but yeah, I've heard really awesome things about ASICS. I need to keep leaning into them.
Well, I can tell a big difference from when I run in the Gel Cumulus, which is kind of currently my daily runner. And then when I do like a speed thing or a longer thing, I'd use the Nova Blast, and there is a marked difference in how I feel. It's worth a shot.
Worth the shot for sure. Okay, cool. Well, let's talk about what's coming up next for you. I know we tabled like some of the things that you're feeling like you wanted to change for this next block. Mm-hmm. So talk to us about what you're training for and some of the changes that you're making.
Yeah. So, I mean, right now, you get the email the day you finish the marathon. Hey, you want the earliest bird price on the Houston Marathon? I was like, yes, I do. And so I have signed up for Houston 2026. So that's the next big marathon, or 27. Goodness gracious, 27. Yeah. So that's the next big one. So really from now until the fall, just going to put on a lot of miles, do a lot of speed work. I got a 5K next weekend, a 5K in the summer. Just have some fun with some of these local runs. Yeah. And then hit it starting in September, I guess, with Ernest. I have a time goal for the next one. So we're going to have to kind of probably not use the same person I got the plan from. I had to do something a little bit different because I have a time goal I want to hit. So I'm going to have to, at least speed days are going to have some pacing in. And I think I'm going to have to do some long runs with some marathon pace, whatever that marathon pace is in there.
Yeah.
But from now until then, I just really, again, I think my body tolerates a lot of mileage pretty decently. And so I just want to have a lot of miles under my belt before I get into the next block. Cool. in the fall. So.
Well, cool. Well, looking forward to seeing. Yeah, I love that it's the same race. I love when people go back and do it again. It's like your redemption. You've got a time time goal going into it with like knowing the course and everything. So that's gonna be so much fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm really looking forward to it. And I like the, again, listening to some of your shows, like a lot of people travel for marathons, and like it's nice that it's in my backyard and I can wake up in my own my own bed, and I can go sleep in my own bed that night. Like that was pretty game changing for me. So
love it. Very cool. Well, sweet. Well, looking forward to follow along with you as you tackle this next marathon block. But yeah, if anybody wants to follow along with you, where can they find you?
I mean, I'm Ryan Trask on Instagram, at Ryan Trask on Instagram. I don't post a ton there, but that is where I am. And then I guess you can look for me on Strava if that's your vice, Ryan Trask on there as well. So
amazing. Well, I'll link everything in the show notes as well, but thank you so much, Ryan, for coming on and telling your story. This was awesome.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the My First Marathon Podcast. For more stories, tips, and resources, head to myfirstmarathonpodcast.com. And if you want access to bonus episodes, exclusive resources, and extra support for your training, make sure you check out the community at myfirstmarathonpodcast.com/exclusives. You can also follow along with us on socials, Instagram and TikTok. That's at myfirstmarathonpod. If you want to follow along with my personal journey, that's at tay.says. Whether you're training, recovering, or just thinking about signing up, you belong here. I'm so excited that you're here, and we'll see you on the next one.